This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Alright, welcome everybody to Cinematic Animalia, where we break into homes and pneumatize bones. This is the podcast where, yes, we have been, I have been attempting to pneumatize a lot of bones lately.
We need to stop that.
Yeah, fair enough, my bad.
I mean, it works as a tagline considering our history.
Yeah, break into homes and pneumatize bones. That is 100% Cinematic Animalia. No, but we are a podcast whereby we take somebody's favorite movie creature, monster, whether it be horror or, you know, your favorite pet dragon, and look at how they might work in the real world by examining their ecology and physiology. Today we are looking at the physiology of the bastard son of Loki, aka Modor, I believe, aka the monster from 2017's Scandi horror film by, I believe, a British director, The Ritual.
American director.
Okay.
And so daughter of,
okay, fair enough. With me today, as always, is co-host number one, Adam Hathath. And
I'm number one, baby.
Hathath, yes, you are co-host number one. Along with me, he is a PhD candidate.
Not a candidate yet.
Sorry. He has his we will be PhD candidates together in 2 weeks. 2 weeks?
A little over a month is when I'll have the oral defense.
Okay, a little over a month. Adam is at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. I'm at the University of Norwegian Science and Technology in Trondheim. And we both write for and run jointly ecologyforthemasses.com, which you should go and check out. And co-host number two is Dave, our vet friend from Canada.
Allegedly.
We got through. Allegedly, yes. We got through.
Yeah, we're just adding that now.
How's it going, guys?
Good.
Going real well. The little quick PSA up top, I just got back from Zion National Park, which is one of the most wonderful places on Earth as far as seeing wonderful natural beauty and really cool, crazy geography and nature. But it's also a very heavily trafficked tourist area. And I should say that if you are thinking about making one of those cute little cairns, those little stacks of stones for your Instagram, don't fucking do it. It destroys habitat. It's pollution. It's the same as spray painting your shitty graffiti all over the rocks. It's terrible. Stop doing it.
Oh, man, are you saying I'm not allowed to, like, do shitty graffiti all over the rocks? But I've put my name with a Z in it everywhere in Yellowstone National Park.
What would you even do then? Zam? That's dumb.
Zam, yeah. Oh. Isn't that what the cool kids do? You put a Z in there somewhere?
I don't know. Is it lit? Oh, man.
I know what lit means. I know lit, and let's veer away from modern trends. All right. Today, like I said, we are looking at The Ritual. Really, this is, I think this is our first venture into, like, hardcore horror. I mean, we've obviously had The Quiet Place, but I feel like that was kind of a bit more sci-fi, home invasion sort of thing. There was King Kong, which is technically a horror film, I guess, and The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Well, the original one was.
Yes, yeah. However, I can't say that The Creature from the Black Lagoon was very scary.
No, but good movie.
And then Gremlins, of course, but, I mean, Gremlins is more of a dark comedy.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much
anyway,
so.
How today's going to work is Adam's going to take us through the plot of the movie, tell us a bit about the creature, some of the differences with the book, the original text it comes from, and then Dave will get stuck into the physiology of this timorous beastie, which sounded like it was a real fun ride.
Fuck!
And then, yeah, there'll be a short PSA at the end from the vet of the group, of course. But yeah, let's get started. Adam, you want to take us through the... Adam's yawning.
I would trying never do not such to a thing. Microphone.
Yeah.
Yes.
I also want to give a quick shout out to a podcast I listened to this week, which it's called Batman vs. the World, and it kind of takes a new figure from pop culture every week and looks at how they might do against Batman.
Yeah.
No, but this week they looked at Batman vs. King Kong.
Okay.
I couldn't help thinking of our little King Kong versus Alonzo Harris from Training Day.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Batman would do a lot better against him, but they were going up against the King Kong from the 2005.
Ooh, the gorilla.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like, I think that that gorilla still would have been a bit slower than it was in the movie.
A lot slower. But
be pretty strong. Not as strong, again, not as strong and as fast as it was in the movie, but yeah. It still might give Batman a bit of a challenge. But, yeah.
Does Batman have enough trank to trank Kong? He'll go to the Gotham only Zoo and test it on, like, the other gorillas there. Like, oh, that one's dead. All right.
He's just breaking in at night, just testing. And then, like, there's a zookeeper with a broom who just runs in and starts, like, shoot, get out of here, you damn Batman. Batman's like, shoot. Batman kind of flocks.
Shoot.
Cool. So, Netflix's The Ritual is an adaptation of the 2011 novel of the same name by Adam Neville. It is set, just like in the movie, in northern Sweden. These four friends go on this hiking trip. But unlike the movie, the book is a bit different as far as the kind of the secondary villains and the whole premise for why they're there. So in the movie, they do a really good job of setting up this fifth friend that doesn't exist in the book, Bob, who gets murdered in this convenience store right in front of Luke. Luke. And they all kind of resent him for it, and that kind of comes out in the movie with their dislike of him and their general kind of antagonistic attitudes towards him. In the book, it's more a case of he's just kind of a loser. They're all,
Is Luke, I'm very bad with names.
Rafe Spall.
Luke is Rafe Spall, okay. So yeah. The one who survives to the end.
Yeah, the main character. Yeah. The main character, Rafe Spall, Luke, he's in mid-30s, like the rest of them. They all have families, they all have real careers and real jobs. He's working in a record store. He's never had a real job. He's never had a real partner. He's very much kind of just still living his 20s, but it's kind of sad at this point. And he's also has kind of drifted apart from them since their days in university together. And that kind of comes out more in the book. Dom, the one who messes up his knee in the movie, also does the same thing in the book. But he is also a bit more of a whiny bitch about it the entire time because he's really fat. He's out of shape, just like Phil, the darker gentleman in the movie. The movie is more or less kind of follows most of the same beats as the book in that you don't really see the monster until the very end. They do a really, really good job of kind of keeping it at the periphery and just kind of amping up the tension, which it can be hard to translate that from the book to the movie in most cases, but I think they did a pretty good job of setting up this very atmospheric, very foreboding, very dark forest filmed in Romania, not in Sweden, interestingly. But as an added element of danger, the local Romanian crew was telling them this is like one of the most or the most bear active area in the world. And there were bears around set. The director never saw them, but plenty of people did. So that kind of added a bit of that tension to the movie itself, which is really interesting. Yeah. And
that there's, a couple of bears around and all you've got to protect you is a couple of, massive semi-automatic machine guns, I'm assuming.
It's Europe, scary. So probably not.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Even though he's an American director, he probably had 14 guns on him at all time, regardless, because that's what you have to do as an American. The biggest one, in the movie, they kind of stumble across this demon worshipping cult in the woods, and they're kind of this stereotypical tropey group of old people, like, oh, wow, okay, they're worshipping this monster in the woods, they live in seclusion, blah, blah, blah. I didn't care for that as much, especially after reading the book, where what happens is all the friends are picked off one by one, just like in the movie. However, Dom, the one who was sacrificed right in front of Phil, they're just kind of the last two left. They're both exhausted. It's been days. They haven't been sleeping. They haven't been eating. And they're walking, and then Luke just kind of notices that Dom's gone. Because that's just what happens, because it's been picking them off one by one very sneakily. And Dom falls. Luke rapes Ball, falls asleep. He wakes up in this cabin, tied to a bed, and there are these three people stand at the foot of his bed wearing these horrible demonic masks, and it turns out that they are members of a black metal band called Blood Frenzy. And their entire plan is to take Luke and sacrifice him to the Forest God so they can be the ultimate Scandinavian black metal, pagan worshippers. And they're going to try to resurrect Odin because they're descended from Vikings, and they go by name. Their names are Fenris and Loki and Surtur. But they're all crazy. And the old woman, from the movie, is the only one from the cult in the book. And what turns out is that she is like the last follower of this cult, because they also find, just like the shack they find in the movie, they also find this old church that seems to have all these markings and worshipings for the beast. And you also see like this pit with all these broken skulls, and it's kind of assumed that what had happened was they would bring people to the beast, it would rear up and stomp their heads in. which you kind of get a taste of at the very end of the movie a little bit. But long story short, the old woman lets him go because the whole plan was that she was going to have him kill the teenagers, the black metal kids, and the monster would come and kill him because she was still going to sacrifice him. But like in the movie, he gets away. And that's I read the book after seeing the movie, and even at this brief description, I still highly recommend that book because it's a really cool, different take on this plot, and it's a bit different, you know, reading about the monster as opposed to seeing it on the screen.
Yeah, I was a massive wuss. I can't take a jump scare, so I always enjoyed reading horror a lot more than watching it.
Yeah.
It was, but I enjoyed going through bits of this film. I never watched the entire thing start to finish because I couldn't really get time to it. And I kept having to shut it off while my co-workers or boss came into the office.
Perfect.
Yeah.
This is a lie for Sam just hiding under his bed sheets the entire time, screaming as Cammy tells him over and over again, it's just a movie and he has to keep pausing it.
I was in the fetal position a lot, I will give you that, yeah.
It's different.
But I'll tell you what, weird monster. Weird fucking monster.
Oh my god, really cool
that
though.
That creature design is awesome.
It is, it's really cool. Yeah.
And as if you've seen the movie and you've seen the creature, you're going to know that it is fucked from a physiological point of view, so have fun with that, Dave.
Oh, but it's, it's interesting. And like the Norwegian death metal, I don't know if they got rid of that because...
Black metal.
Norwegian death metal is a huge cult.
Black metal.
Black metal different. Is a huge thing over here in Norway. But it's died down in recent years because a lot of it has very strong ties to neo-Nazi groups.
Yes.
Not all of it. I've got a couple of like really nerdy friends who go to things like the massive German festival every year.
That's just rock though. That's not black metal.
Wasn't there a big black... Well, regardless, there's a... Yeah.
The thing...
You know, some of them are really nice, but yeah, there's some sect of it that have huge ties to Nazis.
Yeah, for those of you that aren't too much into the metal scene, I'm a big metal fan, but for black metal, it's much more of like... When people think of like Satanist and dark things, like black metal is as close as you're going to get to the public's idea of what metal fans are, where they will have, you know, animal parts on stage. They're actually throwing real blood onto the crowd. They smell... You have, and then at least in Norway, the big scene was in the early 90s where you had all the church burnings, where a bunch of people, there were about 50 different acts of vandalism on these old Scandinavian churches that were, you know, hundreds if not thousands of years old. I think there was hundreds of years old, but they burned them down, they put them on their metal covers, and there was also a couple of murders involved with this that were some of the band members kind of having murders against each other.
Well, it's all very pleasant. But what else do we need to know about this creature before we get stuck in though? It's did you say, Dave, the bastard daughter of Loki?
Yeah, in the book it's supposed to be the bastard child of, but in the book it's the bastard child of Odin, as opposed to in the movie it's the bastard, and it's never described if it's a bastard daughter or son. It's just simply listed as the bastard child
they
of
say
Loki,
son
which
the,
fits.
The woman in the shack says son though, doesn't she, when she's talking about
she I thought she said bastard offspring, but which makes sense because Loki had lots of bastard children. I mean Fenris the wolf is
Fenris.
One of his children, or Fenris, thank
Hel-
you
Hela as well,
yeah, Hela, yeah. So,
yeah,
and the Midgard
definitely
serpent.
And there's a huge
the Midgard serpent was it?
Yep.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And there's a huge amount of Nordic like attachments in the movie in terms of like the home they go into is full of different Nordic runes.
All the runes,
for beings like warrior and Odin. And the same thing goes throughout like the rest of the film, like the way that it's built and set up and the rituals that are followed.
Yeah. And next week we'll talk a little bit about the history of our Norse mythology in cinema, which we had to... It was tough, like, separating that from when we
the
did
Viking.
The history of Vikings in cinema. Yeah. Although I realized, looking at it, we did miss out on a lot of Viking stuff when I went through that.
Yeah. So, another interesting thing about this, at least as far as the distinction, in the book, Mordor, the creature is identified as female, and I don't think it identifies as female, but the antagonist in the movie very much
nobody ever asked it.
Nobody ever asked. So you don't want to assume, but at least the old woman and the people, those petrified mummies in the top of the shack, are revealed to be these weird satyr creatures that have like goat legs and they seem to be immortal, and they're supposed to be the offspring of the creature itself, and the creature is supposed to be female. But I think for the purposes of this movie, because she mentions it being the son of Loki, and because of the antlers, we're going to assume that this is a male creature for the purpose of this podcast.
Okay.
Because it could be, you know, in the book it could have been, you know, sexual dimorphism. The males look a very different way from the females. Yep. I don't think, I mean, that's almost a completely different looking organism, but that does happen in nature. Anglerfish, one of my favourite creatures, being a prime example.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, Dave, do you want to get us started on the physiology?
The deep sea anglerfish collects glowy, glowy bacteria in its wavy thing to create a tiny little light. Because it's dark as hell down there, and someone needs to light up that pretty, pretty lady.
This thing is fucked. I had to rewatch, and I mean, Sam and Adam can attest to it, and I'll if copyright allows me, I will throw up a number of these images on the website as well. But my
but
time
if you,
that
if you
I
haven't
had to,
already, go and Google the ritual monster and have a look at this thing.
I had to go through and take constant screenshot freezes to try and figure out where this thing stopped and started and how big it was and everything like that. And then just when I thought I'd had this thing figured out, there's this scene at the end of the film where the creature goes to stand up on its hind legs and two arms pop out, two human arms at the hip. And I remember audibly screaming as I had to try to figure out how to make that work as well. So,
yeah, for the listeners, we have a little group thread where we kind of talk about our ideas and the things. And it was wonderful about a week ago when Dave was watching this for the first time because you just stream of consciousness, all caps. Like, it has eight arms. Why does it have eight arms? It's got two eyes. There's another head. What is this?
So for the listeners, in terms of my summary was, it has eight limbs total. It's got four ungulate limbs, and then it's also got four human front limbs, thoracic limbs, one attached to the hip, one attached to basically the ramus, if it was an animal, or the underside of the jaw. It has no tail. It's got yellow slitted eyes that are placed within this hooded recessed area that's attached to the face. Yeah, but the eyes themselves are actually slitted. The pupils are slitted. It is revealed, you're right, to be a bastard son of Loki in the book. It's
movie.
Tall. It appears to be approximately one story when it's standing, like, full size.
It's a big, big thing.
What's one story? What do you mean?
About
10 feet.
A little over 3 meters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It has exposed spinous processes, so those big chunks of bone that can be seen rising out from the back. The skin on the arms and legs is very, very odd, and I never actually see it eating.
You never do.
Okay, so I had to try and make this work. So the areas that I'll be focusing on for my discussion today are going to be just general body plan, the skeletal system, the skin, and the oral cavity, because I think those are the easiest things to talk about considering what we can see. And then we'll just make some other side discussions afterward related to this animal's longevity and other attachments, practices, anything like that. So I got to use, as I do every week, where I try to pick an animal found in nature and then kind of use it as my model for metabolism and size and kind of scale it up and make it work. I got to pick one of Sam's favorite animals, the moose.
The majestic moose.
Yes, and got to also use the plural, which is always fantastic because it isn't, but I love meeses.
Yeah.
I
told a friend that it was meese or moosai or something like that, and they didn't realize I was joking, so they were going around to everybody telling people that the plural of moose was meese.
Yes.
That's
spread
wonderful.
Spread it around. So I did check this thing's height. There's a scene where it's holding up a woman in the film. The actor is around 5'4", and sort of based on that estimate, it looks like our creature is about 8 feet or 2.5 meters, sort of like from the ground.
It looks
up
a lot
to
bigger
kind of,
than that, though.
I know. So it kind of hunches. It's
maybe at the withers, at the shoulder, but the head kind of keeps going.
Oh, yeah. No, if we go up to the antlers, then we're getting up into like the 10 feet kind of range. But if we're just coming up to basically where the face meets kind of thing, we're approximately 8 feet, 2.5 meters. Based on the Yukon moose, which is the world's largest moose, is about this size, up to the withers in terms of it's around 2.5 meters, and it does weigh about 1,000 kilograms. So that's approximately what we're going to be expecting the motor weighs. Its antlers are really fucked. They come out of the head in a very strange sort of way, and the way that they attach to the skull is completely different than what we're normally used to. However, lots of species have antlers. this could work. Now, it's more or less from a skeletal perspective, exactly the same as a moose up to approximately the shoulder or the scapula. Up to that point, I can say, hey, it's pretty much a moose because it's got moose legs.
Do they bend the same way?
Yep. In terms of the way that it's running, I went through like the skeleton. I even mapped it out in a little diagram that I'll try to attach as well. Everything seems to work well. The human limbs that are coming off of the hips are the only sort of like fucked up part. I think that they're vestigial. So for anybody who's watching, vestigial just means it's like your appendix. It's an extra organ that may have served some function at a earlier point in your development. That at this point really isn't doing much anymore.
And we should say at that point, it's an earlier point in the species development, not the individual's development. Yes.
Right. And it's a really good example of evolution, because evolution doesn't work on the principles of creative or, you know, intelligent design, in that a lot of stuff just gets left over. We have extra pieces that are kicking around that are just pieces left over from where we used to be.
Yep.
So yeah, all of this stuff works from a gravity perspective, from a hold perspective. And then we hit the fucking scapula. And that's where I start having problems.
Shoulder blade.
Moose use a similar system for attaching the rest of their body to their skeleton, as do horses and other animals. That's not a problem. But then horses, contrary to popular belief, and moose also, the cervical vertebrae, so the spine that's coming up that's arising from basically your shoulders to your neck, in us, it travels quite close to the surface. That's why you can kind of reach back and feel your spine along the edge of it.
We're all However, feeling our spine. Horses, I hope you are at home too.
Yeah. In horses, it does kind of a swoop. It kind of goes low and then comes up and connects to the skull. So there's actually a fair amount of tissue on either side in the dorsal or ventral or sort of top and bottom region. Now, in this creature, it's not going to really be able to do that, because those chunks of spine that we see, those spinous processes, so those long pieces of bone that seem to be erupting from the skin, they're present all the way up. They run the entire length of this creature, basically up into the shoulders, and a little bit above is where it stops. So it's going to have a pretty high spine up to that point.
Yeah, it looks a lot like, you know, they theorize that some sort of dinosaurs might have looked like they've just uncovered another sauropod that had spiny processes like that. It was a lot higher up to the, and you have a lot of creatures that had that sort of thing whereby it's either, you know, like a sail for heat regulation potentially, or just extra muscle attachments.
Yeah.
But of course, these, they're just exposed. They're there's no
100% exposed bone, and I have a theory about them that I'll get into as I go along.
That it's a cool creature design and they make it look horrifying.
I mean, it's just chunks of bone sticking out of its skin. It can't have any function.
Sticking out the top, kind of like a Stegosaurus.
But not even. Stegosaurus have, like, dermal plates, and you can actually see them shift and... Or, sorry, we theorize that you would have been able to see them shift and move as the animal,
like, you can actually
along.
See this happen if you go to the Stegosaurus exhibit. You're like,
I love the Stegosaurus exhibit.
Oh, my God, so good. And then you go to Bigfoot afterwards and get a chunky ice cream.
Then you can go see the Apatosaurus, but you really can't because it doesn't exist. It's only the Brontosaurus, and it was just because of two people that were hunting fossils having a prank war with each other. Perfect.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around. I thought the Sorry, Dave, keep going.
He tries hard,
ladies and gentlemen. He's doing his best.
I'm trying. The chunks of bone don't seem to move. Like, they're very static, they're very locked in, and their position and the way that they look, I 100% think these are spinous processes. These are just, they're rising out directly from the spine. Now, as we get above that, we have this enormous, weird, round, well, sort of rectangular-shaped chunk of tissue with horns coming off of it that also hides this recessed area where we know that there are eyes and potentially a face, and then coming out from the side are arms attached to the side of the face. So this is where it gets difficult. So I think all of that is skull. In terms of, or at least it's some composition of bone and tissue, because it's holding antlers on the one side and it's holding arms on the bottom. Now, the only way to hold arms and to get human arms that move and shift and go up and down is you have to create a shoulder joint, a ball joint like what we have, that the arm actually locks into so that you can get movement in multiple directions and the bones will sustain the ability to lift something up. And this creature is seen holding, as I said, that actor in the film up at arm's length. It's got to be strong, so it's going to have quite a set of muscle, and it's going to need a really strong skeletal attachment. Now, this is kind of weird because it means it's theoretically going to be carrying a huge amount of weight attached to basically the skeleton that makes up the neck, the cervical vertebrae, but this could be done. I mean, we do it in terms of, like, we basically carry all of our weight when we're standing upright on our spine.
It looks like now, from the appearance, I can't speak to this from the anatomical point of view like you can, Dave, but at least it looks like it has the kind of that hunched, very short neck, very big, bulky shoulders. It looks like it has that amount of muscle to do that kind of strength and attachment.
I think it could. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a big load, because again, like, your ability to walk up and pick another human being up at arm's length, this thing has the same sort of arms that we do. I don't think it'd be able to do this. I don't think it'd be able to lift up a human and carry it around like that. There's just not enough type of muscle and skeletal design that you'd be able to get away with that type of action. The arms would have to be located further back on the body, closer to the shoulder. Otherwise, you're wandering around. This is the equivalent of Adam trying to come up to another human being, grab it with his jaw, and then pick it up using his neck.
Which I would never do.
It would not work.
It's not Adam's go-to move at a night.
No, I have not. No, I wasn't kicked out of Zion National Park. I chose to leave of my own accord.
It would not work, is what I'm trying to get at. Adam could do it. It just wouldn't work.
Could they work better as, like, extensions of the skull, just like, you know, more elaborate antlers? Like, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that they would be able, you could potentially design arms where you'd have a secondary section of bone that connected if you reinforced your skull and you had arms. And I think that they could work. They just wouldn't be super strong. They'd be able to pick, like, leaves and berries and things like that, but they wouldn't be able to pick up a whole human being, and that's not a problem because you or I can't walk up to another similar-sized human being and just, like, lift them up. You can lift up a child, but...
What about structures like the elephant's trunk? These are... Because at least with these arms that are coming out of the forest god's face, they can do kind of fine... You would assume they could do fine motor skills with the fingers at the end. But they're also strong enough to pick up an adult human by the head and hold them aloft with seemingly little effort. And at least for an elephant, their trunk could do everything from hold a little flower and paint to picking up an entire log that probably weighs 50 kilos plus.
Right, but there are still limitations. That's primarily like a muscular action rather than a skeletal. That's saying that the muscle is going to be like different from the skeleton. It's just there are different weight loading properties. I'm not saying it's not possible. It's just it'd be really like... It's got human-sized arms here that it's attempting to lift things up with. Yeah. And it's not like this creature looks like
a bit bigger, though.
But it doesn't look like the Rock on the front. I'm not seeing,
I just meant the length, they're not particularly muscular.
Yeah.
No, I'm not...
How about if you had, like, two elephant-style trunks, like, as feeding mechanisms coming out of the side instead?
Because I'm thinking, at least from the...
I mean, that'd take up...
The realistic point of view that we're seeing this movie from Rafe Spall's character's point of view. And I think it'd be safe to assume that he's delirious, he's been in the woods for days, he hasn't eaten well, and he's also terrified out of his mind. He might be assuming that he's seeing these human arms, but in reality it could be these trunk-like appendages that because he is so out of his mind with terror, he thinks they're human arms.
Sure, I'd have to, I know the basics of how an elephant trunk works, I'd have to look into the weight loading properties. I'm not saying that these couldn't work, I'm just saying it'd be difficult to get them, and also... The way that the joint is built, the socket joint would have to be coming out really near the bottom. It's not like well localized in the middle of the tissue or towards the dorsal or upper aspect. It's coming off the bottom. That means you're carrying a lot of weight on most likely a small amount of bone and muscle lower down. It's not an ideal design for trying to move this. Now, in terms of this recessed area, which the face looks like a vulva. Like, it's just like it's like a recessed area that hides the face.
That was another one of the stream of consciousness all cap text strings that we got from Dave.
Why is its face of a
joke? I was watching it with a friend of mine who was just like, it looks like the face is located in a vulva. And I was like, yeah, it does. So
just peeking out, saying hi every now and again.
Right. It's going to have some system of skull or something that's attached inside of there that basically is holding that face in. As I said, I think that's all skull, that entire chunk. So it's going to need to have sockets, and it's going to need to have some sort of teeth that we'll talk about a little bit later on. Yeah. Now, the skin. The skin is fucked on this thing as well. So the couple of scenes that we see it, one when it's actually like Don wakes up from his nightmare where he thinks he sees his wife, and you can get a really clear look at the arms and the hands and also the skin that makes up the tissue all the way around the recessed area that holds the eyes. And also when, a terrifying scene, he's just killed one of the cultists and he turns around and the Modor is attempting to come into the house and is like reaching its arms in on either side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that scared the crap out of me.
You just see these two front big moose-looking legs. Then you see these two human-looking hands grab the door frame, and then the head kind of peeks in with those glowing eyes. And man, I love this creature design.
Although my favorite for like scary moment of this was the thing they gave it away in the trailer though, like when he's just looking at the trees and then all of a sudden you see a hand shift.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Crept the shit out of me. I was a little annoyed that they spoiled that.
I never watched the trailer.
I heard about this through a podcast, and so I watched it immediately. But the moments like that, I think, are really good because this thing is, for its size, it is pretty good at blending in with the trees. And there's a really good scene where this have the fixed camera, the three remaining people are walking up the hill, and then you didn't even see it there, but then it moves. It was there the whole time and kind of moves off in the distance. You're like, Jesus.
Yeah. The skin looks thickened. It looks hyperkeratinized. It looks unusual. It's really nasty looking. I think this thing was burned. I think that's the best. And I think that also explains a whole bunch of the other problems with the anatomy. So there doesn't appear to be much hair on Motor, but there are patches where the hair seems to be sort of trying to grow out, but it's not really growing all the way. The skin is very unusual. It's unevenly built. And also, as Sam pointed out, those chunks of free bone, the spinous processes that are sitting out of the back. In many other animals, you can have a back that actually comes up and goes over that, or you can find yourself in a situation where there might be a flap or extra skin that's attached. I think all of that's been burned off. Now, we are in a Swedish forest. I did some reading about how frequently they do get forest fires. If this thing is as old as they say it is, and it's been around for quite a while, most likely it has suffered from, or I would expect it suffered from, burns. And I think that's the best explanation for why the skin looks all strange, why where the antlers are coming out, why this thing should have fur. It should have hair attached to it based on where it's living.
But it's very, very patchily distributed, like
sparse,
you said.
And it just kind of grows in strange areas. This also might explain why some of this body and this physiological form is so abnormal, that we're looking at it and we're like, oh, like there should be more of a mouth there. There should be more of a insert piece of tissue there. Stuff might have gotten burned off. The problem with fire is like first degree burns are sunburn, that kind of thing, directly across the epidermis. Second degree burns and third degree burns go deeper. And when they go deeper, a lot of the time, if you destroy the underlying stem cell tissue, it's never going to grow back.
Right.
And there are situations where we run into cases where animals have been so badly burned, they've actually got fourth degree burns down to the bone or the underlying tissue. And the tissue can kind of heal around it. But we can run into situations where an animal has exposed chunks of bone and just kind of lives like that. It's not good, but it's definitely something that can happen. So I think that's the best explanation for why this is. Now, if I was trying to make this work, because we are Cinematic Animalia and we do try to make these things work, the only other reason for having thickened skin like this is, one, if you're a desert-dwelling creature that's attempting to cut down on hair, which this thing isn't, or the other reason is defense, something like an elephant or a rhino, a crocodile, an armadillo. Yeah. But like, I don't see any like predator that's going to be striking in these types of region, and the tissue doesn't look evenly distributed. It looks very odd.
There's a lot of bears and wolves in that sort of area,
but not to the same. Like, I mean, it's just, it's all over. The tissue looks angry everywhere on this creature.
I'm thinking that is more a result of competitive interactions with other members of the species. And we can touch on that more on the ecology side.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the last thing that I wanted to just briefly touch on was going to be the oral cavity, because this thing is just a pain in the ass. Yeah. So I think, and you guys can talk about this a little bit more, but like I do think it's going to be primarily a herbivorous dentition, or primarily a plant eater. It can stand on its hind legs, and the problem is with that recess, we do imagine that the oral cavity is going to be located within that recessed chunk of face, which means that it has to be putting stuff into that hole. Now, you can't really do that as a carnivore. You need to have your teeth exposed so that you can chomp and you can rip and you can tear. I think one of the reasons, and you guys, that it may have arms is it may have arms and the ability to stand straight up like it does in order that it can pluck branches, trees, or branches, leaves, things like that from higher areas.
This is exactly what I think.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Therefore, yeah.
And the only other thing it's going to need, it's going to need increased thickness associated with its intervertebral discs. So the plates in between, the spongy part between its spine. If it's going to be standing up on a regular basis, it's one of the things that humans struggle with. We actually have thickened intervertebral discs in some areas just due to the fact that we walk upright so often. And other animals that want to more frequently take on this sort of extended lifestyle, this choosing to stand up, they're going to need modifications. Okay. Now, the only other possibility for this creature would be that there is a head stored within that recessed area that's capable of popping out, kind of like a turtle.
The vertebrae required for that is surely impossible.
The vertebrae, the muscle, the setup, it doesn't make sense. Also, turtles, when they're examining things, pop their head out. So that entire scene where it's got Don tied up and it's examining his face using its hands, it would have its head out if that was the case.
Although, at least with these hands, we can assume that they're able to kind of bring food particles into that recessed area to its mouth.
Right, but I just, maybe, but then there's also the problem of there's a chunk of bony material that's hanging off of this sort of head arrangement thing that's in front of that recess that looks like it would block any head that was trying to come out around it.
Right.
So I don't think that makes sense. I think this whole recess that we're seeing is probably a protective mechanism. This means that something is striking it on a regular basis, or at least something did, depending on how old this thing is.
Competitive interactions.
And its attempt... It's attempting to protect its eyes. It's attempting to protect its brain. And clearly it's doing a decent job because he hits this thing in that skull area with a hatchet at one point, and we don't see any like exposed brain matter. The hatchet does seem to go in pretty easily.
Probably
it doesn't
the eye
look like it quite
on the side of its head if it has one.
Maybe. But like there's some damage to like that surrounding tissue.
Also, that screenshot that you put up of when he hacks that thing, I swear to God, it looks like there's a nipple on the left side of whatever he's hitting.
I think that's an eye, or at least I think it's a vestigial eye. I don't think it works anymore, but like there appear to be almost like little eyes attached to the front of this thing, but they don't seem to be working. They're not in the right position for it. They're completely closed over. But yeah, the entire anatomy with this thing, if it did have a nipple, totally reasonable because this thing is just so messed up.
A nipple on its face.
I think that it's going to have herbivore teeth. So herbivore teeth are primarily molars and premolars for grinding and chomping things up. And that does fit with the rest of the body plan. If it's something like a moose, moose have a gastric intestinal system similar to what we see in cows, in that they have four chambers, not four stomachs. They have four chambers associated with their stomach. And so most likely they're going to be going through a similar system. I imagine they're going to have a big row of internal molars that are going to be present within that skull setup that are going to be used for grinding and chewing cud.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that works with the kind of the lifestyle I've envisioned, yeah.
Yeah. So that's my creature. There's lots of stuff that I didn't talk about because it's fucked and I'm not going into that much more associated with it. But this was the best I could do to put it together. I think that I can make most of the stuff that was with it work. It's just, and you guys will talk about this, I don't see any reason why any creature would develop a body plan like this unless, because like you don't want your eyes hidden within your skull. It's going to create huge blind spots on both sides where things can attack you. It makes no sense.
And I mean, Sweden is a really dark place, but only for half of the year.
Right.
I mean, in a forest like that, it's really, really thick. And even in the bright parts of the day, it's going to be really dark in that forest. So that kind of makes sense if it has maybe these little more nocturnally based eyes that are used for this fine scale manipulation of food.
But if it has
these side eyes, that'd be good for predator detection or having more of a
reason why cows and horses have their eyes on their side is exactly because it creates a wider field of vision. Exactly. Yeah. And that could be a thing. It's just I don't see those eyes working. They don't seem to catch the light. It never turns to use them. There are also no visible pinna or ears attached to this thing. And I don't see any obvious nose. So the problem is I would expect if it was doing more dark light setup, it would evolve modifications to both of those organs to allow it to better hear or better smell. And again, I don't see the entire face, but creating a recess is not going to make it easier for you to smell if your nasal cavity is located in there. Now, again, I think this animal has been burned, so I might not be seeing all of the features really clearly. It might have had better developed ears that have been burned off, and maybe I'm just not seeing the access point to the vertical canal. It's also...
Like Adam said, this is like Rafe's ball. He's delirious. He's walking around. So for all we know, it's three guys in a trench coat. I mean...
Mr. Business? You know.
Yes, Mr. Business from BoJack Horseman. Classic, very, very accurate documentary.
Yes, I'm trying to picture right now the three of us got together and tried to play the different parts of the creature. I feel like Adam would definitely be riding up on the top. I'm really hoping
Adam's thighs are steel. You would be up the top.
Okay, I'm okay with that as long as I'm not on the back.
No, I think I'd have to take the back.
Can I be the butt?
I'm used to being behind Adam. Way sex joke.
But yeah, so
bottom, though,
a little bit of body humor sneaks into
that's my creature. Now, the only thing that I could use your guy's hand for talking about is one, this thing's intelligence seems to vary drastically in the film. It seems to be vocalizing at one point in low tones, and there seems to be some basic understanding of everything. However, it also makes a lot of terrible decisions when it comes to like it. Putting the human right back down next to the axe, giving him a chance to get away, letting him get close to the rifle. It doesn't seem to have a great understanding of that.
We can kind of make exceptions for that.
Yeah, and not a great idea. I don't tend to push my enemies closer to their weapons, just as a general rule.
Might not really have seen the hatchet or know what it was.
Right.
I think it's more just like this thing's been King Dick of the Forest for so long that it's just gotten naive.
And I don't know if it's actually speaking or if it's just whispering in low tones or just making some sort of vocalization that these people have been like, oh, it's speaking. And they keep saying, you know, it's super old, it's been around forever. I have no idea, so I'm not going to try to get into lifespan or anything like that with it.
Yeah, we can get into that next week.
But that's my motor.
Cool. Well done, Dave.
Wonderful, Dave.
All right, well, do you want to give us a quick PSA before we sign off?
What is it?
A god? Ancient? A bastard offspring of Loki. We do not say its name.
I guess my big thing is going to be it's feeding into nutrition, and I wouldn't think that I'd have to make this point, and hopefully nobody watching this is making these types of terrible decisions, but... animals need the proper nutrition in terms of what you're feeding them. And I know this whole raw food trend is a big thing right now, and I'm not going to get into that, but if you are going down that path, you're wanting to do some of your own cooking of your own food at home, there's a great website that's run by one of the local American veterinary schools called Balance It that you can go in and type what you're feeding, and it'll give you recommendations to add other material to get iron or to get calcium or to get things like that added. Years ago when I was in veterinary school, I had a puppy come in. I had a puppy come into the hospital at one point that an owner had just been feeding peanut butter and jam sandwiches for its first 7 weeks of life.
Jesus.
Oh, fucking
yeah. Brutal. And so it came in and its skeleton had a feeling like chalk as we palpated it. I got to see one again 3 days ago of an owner that brought in that had only been feeding chicken breast from this animal had been 2 weeks to 9 weeks old. And it came in and its skeleton was poorly developed. Its brain was not in the right capacity. You gotta make sure what you're feeding is balanced. And this applies to all animals, all creatures. Proper nutrition is important. You are controlling what they eat, and it's important that you make good decisions. If you have any questions, I know that it's an unpopular opinion, it seems, with modern owners, but kibble is complete and balanced. In Canada and the United States, that's a legally binding statement. If you pick up a bag of kibble and on it, it says complete and balanced, it means that it's been tested and it has all the nutrition that if that animal eats only that diet, it will get everything that it needs to survive. And when you don't, we see animals with serious deficits associated with their diet. We see it in adults all the time too, where they come in and they're thin and they're distraught and they're not getting the right material. You are responsible for feeding your pets.
Yep.
Yeah. So cool. If you're in doubt, just feed it some kibble. But yes, if not, use balance it. But yeah, that is my PSA for the week.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Have we got anything more to talk about before we end this?
I don't think so.
Nope. Cool. All right. Well, we'll tune back in next week where we'll talk about the ecology of Mordor or this thing. Should be an interesting discussion. Adam, meantime, you want to take us home?
Absolutely. If you want to check us out on Twitter, follow Sam at SamParentNTNU. I'm at HasekAdam, all one word. Find the podcast at C_Animalia. Our website is CinematicaAnimalia.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or suggestions for future monsters, email us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. If you want to check out more of the harder science side of what Sam and I do on Ecology for the Masses, check out ecologyforthemasses.com. And remember, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye, everyone.
Bye guys.